Israel to do two things. One is that Israel has been withholding PA, Palestinian Authority, money, taxes, and revenues right. For the past 5 months. Israel claimed that part of that money goes to the Palestinians in Gaza, or and even though those Palestinians in Gaza are not members of Hamas, but Israel is trying to punish the Palestinians collectively. And second, there are more than 100,000 Palestinian laborers who are from the West Bank, and since the war erupted, they are no longer working, and that is destabilizing the situation in the West Bank now.
Thank you. We're unfortunately fresh out of time. Thank you, Mukhabir Abu Sada, Professor of Political Science at Al-Azhar University. Daniel Shah, thank you, academic and commentator from New York. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mika Vitawe and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim rabbi arini kayfa tuhyi al-mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Death toll from U.S.-Israeli genocide in the besieged Gaza Strip is nearing 31,000, more than 5 months into the campaign of genocide against the Palestinians there. A spokesperson for the Hamas military wing stresses priority to strike a prisoner swap deal is ending the aggression completely. And Iraq's Islamic Resistance conducts drone attacks on an Israeli intelligence base in occupied Golan Heights and on oil facilities in Haifa. Now more than 5 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, the regime's indiscriminate attacks continue claiming more Palestinian lives. Latest strikes have hit different locations from northern Gaza to its central and southern parts. 8 people, most of them children, were killed in the southern city of Khan Yunis, and over 12 people lost their lives in Israeli attacks on 2 homes in the town of Al-Qarara, northeast of Khan Yunis. Dozens more were also wounded. A refugee camp in Jabalia, the cities of Deir Abala and Rafah, as well as Gaza City, were also targeted. Total death toll is now nearing 30,880. Also, over 72,400 Palestinians have been injured in the war taking place with U.S. complicity. And starvation in the besieged Gaza Strip continues to take lives of vulnerable Palestinians. 3 more children have lost their lives as Israel blocks aid trucks trying to enter the coastal territory. The Gaza Health Ministry says that children died from lack of water and malnutrition. Now starvation has taken 23 lives in Gaza in recent days. Meanwhile, 5 Palestinians, including children, have been killed and several injured after being hit by aid airdropped by the U.S. Incident occurred when parachutes attached to that aid failed to open, causing boxes to fall on crowds that had gathered to collect them. Now, Israel's blocked entry of almost all essentials into Gaza, including foodstuff, water, and medicine, and the regime began its onslaught on the territory in early October. And now joining us for an update from the central Gaza city of Deir Abala is Muti Abu Musabe, Hello, Moti. What's the latest on the ground there, if you could tell us?
Well, Danny, actually, it was a horrific night for the Palestinian people across all areas of Gaza Strip, as this genocide is still persistent in different areas of Gaza Strip. Let's begin from Rafah. At least 4 Israeli airstrikes hit the residential tower there, Al-Masri residential tower. It was completely destroyed by those vehement airstrikes. Dozens of the Palestinian injuries were reported and transported to the Abu Yusuf al-Najjar hospital in the city. While in Khan Yunis city, the Israeli airstrikes continued against different parts of the city, particularly the western parts. Several Palestinian residential buildings were destroyed and leveled to the ground over those relentless Israeli airstrikes, while the Israeli artillery maintained shelling both the western and the eastern parts of the city. And when it comes to the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained against the eastern part of Deir al-Balah and al-Maghazi refugee camp, while another airstrike hit the western part of Deir al-Balah city. And when it comes to Gaza, the Israeli warplanes also renewed their airstrikes against several areas of the city, As-Sahaba neighborhood and At-Tufah and even Az-Zaytun. In addition to Ash-Shatta refugee camp, they were under heavy bombardments of the Israeli airstrikes, while the eastern parts of the city were targeted heavily by the Israeli artillery. In the meantime, the Israeli starvation war is still persistent against the Palestinian children. It was reported that more 3 Palestinian children were reportedly died of hunger as they were suffering from the malnutrition and the dehydration they sustained of the ceaseless attacks of the Israeli occupation and the Israeli insistence on preventing those Palestinian children from having any real access to their basic humanitarian needs. Into consideration, the collapse of the Gaza's health sector taking place amid this cruel Israeli assault on Gaza Strip. The Palestinian resistance maintained their counterattacks against the Israeli occupation forces, particularly in Hamad neighborhood, which is located in the area between Deir al-Balah city in the central area and Khan Yunis city. Cruel and fierce clashes erupted between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli occupation forces that are still trying to circumvent and to finish the Palestinian resistance there. However, the Palestinian resistance is still fast and able to wage more attacks against the Israeli occupation forces. Over to you.
And Moti, we have breaking news that several people have been killed as Israeli forces have once again attacked Palestinians seeking aid in Gaza City. Next to that, Moti, we have other news that's on our conductor that 5 people were killed by airdropped aid boxes because the parachutes failed to open. That was the aid dropped by the U.S., highlighting the problem of getting this desperately needed aid into the hands of Palestinians there. And it's like wherever they turn for this desperately needed aid, well, systematically they're being targeted by the Israelis. And now with these U.S. boxes falling on the heads of people in desperate need, what do you know about that?
Actually, it's another desperate way in order just to bypass the real problem that the Palestinian civilians are facing here, which is about allowing thousands of the trucks and convoys crammed on the Egyptian side to enter into Gaza Strip. The U.S. administration and some regimes and countries are trying to overcome the main obstacle, and they are trying just to bypass the main obstacle, and they come up with insufficient, let me say, solutions in order to convince the public opinion that they are doing something in order to solve the problem and in order to overcome the catastrophic humanitarian conditions here in Gaza Strip. However, all these solutions are in vain. They are not sufficient to solve the problem. The Palestinian people need actually thousands of the trucks and the humanitarian convoys to be allowed and to flow smoothly into Gaza Strip in order just to bridge the gap in terms of the dire need they have regarding the basic humanitarian needs. It seems that the death is still stalking the Palestinian people wherever they go, even when the U.S. administration and other countries attempted to airdrop the humanitarian aid, they fall down on the heads of the Palestinian residents and claimed the lives of five others. It's another clue and another concrete evidence that there is no solution for this continuous and escalating problem for the Palestinian people, but to allow those convoys, humanitarian convoys, to enter into Gaza Strip smoothly without any restrictions. The only way that the Palestinian people here see in order to end this catastrophic humanitarian situation is to oblige the Israeli occupation forces and to enforce the Israeli occupation to allow entering those humanitarian aid and humanitarian convoys without any restrictions, without any obstacles. This is the only way that we have, and it's simple, by the way. But unfortunately, as you know, about the political willingness that is still unable to oblige the Israeli occupation forces to stop this plural aggression on Gaza.
All right, thank you, Moti. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Moti Abu Musab joining us from Deir al-Balah. And Palestinians have said, we need you to stop dropping food on our heads. We need you to stop giving weapons to the Israeli regime. Meanwhile, the military wing of the Palestinian Hamas resistance movement says the people of Palestine are facing unprecedented U.S.-Israeli hostility as the Gaza Strip is still under bombardment and siege. A spokesperson for the Al-Qassam Brigades described Israel as an occupying regime devoid of humanitarian values, adding Nazi-like massacres are being perpetrated in Gaza. Abu Ubaida noted international law is unable to stop Israel from committing crimes against Palestinians. He said rules of the international community are worn out and ineffective, adding those rules are at the service of hegemonic powers. He also touched on a potential ceasefire, saying priority to strike a prisoner swap deal is ending the Israeli aggression completely. Obeda also referred to anti-Israeli operations launched by Palestinians in early October. He emphasized the Al-Aqsa flood operation was in response to decades of enmity and atrocities against Palestinians. Military wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance movement has released a video showing its fighters opening fire on Israeli soldiers and targeting them with improvised explosive devices. The Al-Quds Brigades conducted an operation against Israeli military site near a settlement called Homish. An explosive device was detonated when regime forces arrived there, causing injuries to at least seven troops. The Israeli military described the incident as serious and launch a manhunt for those behind the operation. Meanwhile, Hamas resistance movement hailed the operation as heroic and natural response to Israel's massacres in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, as well as the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Al-Quds. And there is no respite from violent Israeli acts against Palestinians, whether in Gaza or elsewhere. Regime's military has carried out fresh raids on several areas of the occupied West Bank. Raided areas include Nur Sham's refugee camp near the city of Tulkarm. Israeli forces also clashed with Palestinians during their incursion into that camp. Now, Palestinians managed to blow up a bulldozer at the camp. Elsewhere in the West Bank, regime troops stormed a residential building in the city of Qalqilya. Another Israeli incursion took place at Askar camp near Nablus. Since October the 7th, occupied territories have been witnessing intensified raids by regime forces. Hundreds of Palestinians have been killed and thousands more abducted in the West Bank in the past 5 months. Meanwhile, the Islamic resistance in Iraq says it's carried out more attacks on Israel in solidarity with the Palestinians of Gaza. The resistance group says it's targeted the regime's intelligence base in the occupied Golan Heights. Another attack targeted Israel's oil facilities in the port city of Haifa. Group says it used drones to hit the Israeli sites. And no reports yet of casualties or damage as of yet, but in recent months, Islamic resistance in Iraq has carried out a series of attacks against Israeli positions in occupied territories. It's also attacked U.S. military bases in both Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's support in Israel's campaign of genocide. Thousands of Muslims have rallied outside the U.S. Embassy in the Indonesian capital, Jakarta, to condemn Israel's genocidal war against Palestinians and call for a Gaza ceasefire.
Israel!
carrying Palestinian flags and banners, as well as chanting slogans. Protesters marched down a major street outside the embassy despite heavy police presence. They halted traffic along the way. The demonstration was organized by more than a dozen Islamic groups, which denounced U.S. support for Israel and demanded Washington push Tel Aviv to open more aid routes into Gaza as hunger mounts. Similar rallies are also held in the South Korean capital, Seoul, in condemnation of the Israeli atrocities.
This demonstration started at the Seoul Central Mosque as Muslims around the world are, you know, demonstrating in their opposition to the true genocide that's taking place now in Gaza, with the recent massacre happening in Rafah as people queued to receive humanitarian aid. This news is getting around the world and bringing people out in the street, like here today in South Korea, a country that really doesn't look too strongly at what's going on in the Middle East, and yet people are recognizing that, you know, yes, South Korea does have some involvement with countries in the Middle East, including a rather, you know, now contentious relationship with Israel, as it enjoys $4 billion in trade with Israel, as well as, you know, arms trade of tens of millions of dollars. Well, generally here, the government is trying to take sort of a middle course because, again, of its trade with Israel and its alliance relationship with the United States. Also, it relies, you know, at the same time on its energy security toward Saudi Arabia and the UAE. So the government has been slow both to condemn Israel and hesitant to condemn Israel.
In Austria, pro-Palestinian protesters have held a demonstration during International Women's Day event in the capital, Vienna. They aim to raise public awareness of the plight of the women of Gaza. Our correspondent has interviewed some of those demonstrators.
So today we gathered and we were present at the Vienna Rathaus municipality on an open event on the occasion of International Women's Day. We wanted to protest the hypocrisy of the celebration. We wanted to remind everyone that women's rights is for everyone. We wanted to raise awareness about the situation of Palestinian women in Gaza, who are suffering the worst condition ever since the 5 months. Every single day, 63 women are being murdered. So far, 9,000 women are killed by the Israeli occupation forces. There are 60,000 women pregnant currently at risk of dying for lack of food, for lack of healthcare. So we wanted to synthesize everybody about that. When we talk about women's rights, it's about women's rights everywhere. It's about women's right of everyone, and we wanted to urge people to stop violence against Palestinian women.
So today is the global day for women. It should be a day for celebration. It should be a day and an opportunity for us to rejoice. But we cannot celebrate this day knowing that our sisters in Palestine are suffering, and they haven't only been suffering these last 5 months, but also the past 75 years. We have heard the most gruesome reports about women having to undergo cesareans without an anesthesia. We've heard of newborn children, prematurely born children, which were forced to be left in their incubators, and they were found decomposing later on. We know that women no longer are nourished enough or have enough food to actually breastfeed their own children. So we have a very high mortality of young children under the age of 2. It's just a despicable situation, and it's absolutely intolerable. And we refuse as women to only focus on, let's say, white women feminism. It is important to improve our rights here in the West, but we really have to stand up for those people in other countries who are suffering and who are struggling to survive. And that is our obligation if we want to stand together as women worldwide.
Iran's foreign minister has denounced as illegal and unethical decision by U.S. social media company Meta to suspend the Instagram accounts of leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. In an interview with Middle East Eye, Hossein Amir Abdullahian said the move violates the freedom of speech. Amir Abdullahian said Meta's actions are part of a wider campaign by American social media platforms to censor pro-Palestinian voices. Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has condemned Israel's genocide in Gaza and U.S. support for the onslaught. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
The whole world is silent towards oppression. Even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me, in full, in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
in the limelight.
As the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. recently made clear in a rare moment of honesty, Washington is fully committed to facilitating the Zionist regime's destruction of the Palestinians. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, on the broader geopolitical front, the continuing expansion of NATO as a means to maintain U.S. hegemony in the face of BRICS and multipolarity championed by the Russian-Chinese alliance has put the U.S. regime into panic mode. The utterly cynical U.S. policy of paying for a proxy war in Ukraine as a means of effecting regime change in Russia has proven to be an utter failure, and seen so by more and more U.S. taxpayers, asked to foot the massive bill, even as allegiance to this same war policy impoverishes Europe as well. In the minds of neocon policymakers and the warmongering Uni-Party alliance in Washington, this failure and the geographic imperative to maintain control of certain shipping routes to assure U.S. dominance has almost made the opening of a new front in the West Asia region inevitable, and it is the expendables, the Palestinians, who are being forced to pay the price. Add to all this the fact that following years of orchestrated cognitive dissonance in the U.S. across a myriad range of issues, from election fraud, COVID treatment, vaccination mandates, the summer of George Floyd, January 6, 2021, the war in Ukraine, the Twitter files, to so many others, an ideal situation for those in power has been created. Those once outraged at being censored or shadow banned for views identified with the right are now all too ready to ban pro-Palestinian speech. And those now harassed, doxxed, or even fired for airing their views can't understand what all the fuss has about when Twitter banned President Donald Trump. This can be seen most clearly in questions centered on free speech and through the media and social media landscape, the very realms through which the atrocities taking place daily in Gaza are filtered or presented. We have moved far from the courageous revelations of Julian Assange, who is now appealing against a court ruling to extradite him to the U.S. While the work of Assange, Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, and others involved the exposure of information held in secret from the citizenry, we are now at the stage of unending information saturation in which secrecy no longer seems to matter. With almost everything out in the open and available, the task has become about verifying rather than uncovering reality, and in doing so, narratives are built. Despite various forms of censorship and disinformation in the United States, we have never lived through such a genocidal attack in which so much information is not only readily available but can often be seen in real time. How, then, as both consumers and producers of information as well as political constituents, can we respond to the present situation? From this perspective, it is hard not to see the prolongation of this agony delivered upon a particular people, the Palestinians, and its broadcasting of their most vulnerable moments as some kind of further testing ground of the very category of the human and humans. And it also brings into sharp relief just how limited political powers are, even in ostensibly representative democracies. The significance of South Africa bringing the charge of genocide against the child killer regime of Israel to the International Court of Justice, along with the ICJ's initial findings, cannot be underestimated, but it remains only a tool that we must learn how to use in order to expand the grounds upon which we think and act in the world. As we watch the core institutions in Western societies rot and disintegrate from within due to an inability to name what is happening in Gaza and the world, positions once deemed principled ring more than hollow. As mothers in Gaza can barely give birth or feed their babies, as fathers cannot protect their children, as doctors cannot heal, and as many cannot even retrieve the bodies of their loved ones for burial, we can only conclude that this poisonous cruelty is aimed at the very idea of being a child, a mother, a father, a healer, a mourner. We are up against a regime that has taken direct aim at humanity. With every minute that passes, new lessons in cowardice and cruelty are given by the Israelis and their U.S. and Western enablers. At the same time, we must stand in humble awe of the resistance and humanity shown by the people of Gaza. But in continuing to expose the Zionist regime's genocide against Palestinians, we must ask more of ourselves. We must find ever more useful ways to resist and stay human in pursuit of a just political solution to one of the world's most exposed and festering wounds whose time for healing has long been evident.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
To avert famine, there must be road access to Gaza's north. Words from the World Food Program. After apartheid Israel turns back a convoy trying to get food into Gaza. Hello everyone and welcome back to Gaza Under Attack. I'm Saeed Bourza. U.S.-Israeli bombs continue to rain down on Palestinians in Gaza as talks for a ceasefire grind on in Cairo, Egypt. Hamas has presented its proposal for a ceasefire agreement to mediators. The Israeli regime has not sent any negotiators to the talks. What will their response be? Lebanon's Hezbollah has launched heavy rocket barrages at an Israeli kibbutzim in the north of the 1948 occupied territories in response to an air raid that killed three civilians in southern Lebanon. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, have called for an immediate and durable humanitarian ceasefire in the besieged territory as the holy month of Ramadan approaches. And apartheid Israel's war cabinet minister Benny Gantz in London after spending 2 days meeting power brokers in Washington. Is this the beginning of the end for Benjamin Netanyahu? In only 5 months, the U.S. Europe-backed Israeli genocidal campaign in Gaza has killed more than 30,000 Palestinians and wounded over 72,000 others. With us on this edition of the program, British-Palestinian student and activist Tariq Othman and Rick Sterling, a veteran journalist working with the L.A. Progressive, Anti-War, and Al Mayadeen, to name just a few. Rick joins us via Skype from the Bay Area in California, USA. Thank you both for being here. I'll start with you, Rick. Biden gave the impression a ceasefire was as good as done and dusted, yet here we are. What do you think are the stumbling blocks to a cessation of violence at the moment?
Well, the main stumbling block is the United States' refusal to demand that Israel stop its genocide. There have been 3 United Nations Security Council resolutions that the United States alone has vetoed. The latest manipulation and trick is for the U.S. to say that Hamas is responsible, but in truth, it's the U.S. and the Israeli government.
What do you make of the U.S. government's claim of putting pressure on Israel to agree to a truce, albeit temporary, and a captive swap?
Well, I think they definitely want a fig leaf, and Joe Biden and Joe Biden's team they realize they're in big trouble because the majority of the population in the U.S. and even more so in the Democratic Party are supporting a ceasefire. So they're out on a limb, but they're so beholden to Zionist forces in the United States that they have to do this dance where they pretend to be calling and pushing for a ceasefire and abhorring the slaughter going on there, but at the same time they want to give Israel more time to try to achieve their goal, which is not achievable.
Exactly, and of course they continue to veto UN Security Council resolutions calling for an immediate ceasefire, not to mention the continuing flow of American weapons and money to Israel. Tariq, let me come to you for the next one. How does all of this make you feel, that, you know, more than 5 months on, 152 days on, more than 30,000 people killed, more than 72,000 people wounded, and yet not an immediate permanent ceasefire?
I don't know, you know, what words there are left to describe the situation in Gaza right now, the situation in Palestine. Every combination of condemnation and visual imagery and visual description has been used. Every poet has used every last, you know, description they can think of. And I'm not going to better describe that. We, as all Palestinians, as all, you know, people who are seeing it, you know, seeing a genocide unfold with our own eyes, on camera, on Instagram, on social media, whilst our political class are 100% backing it, we've completely been lost for words. There's nothing that can describe it better than
what kind of action will you take? Because we're in an election year, not just here in the UK, but in the States and more than 50 other countries. When you see this dithering on the part of the political class here, as you put it, be it the conservatives or Labour, someone as young as you and the likes of you out there, how will you get back at these people, in power who can stop a genocide but won't or haven't so far?
Well, very simply, I would refuse to vote for any of these supposed representative parties. Many people make the comment that if I was to not vote for Keir Starmer or Labour, that would make a conservative leadership more likely. Mm-hmm. The very simple fact is that if we're going to profess to be in a democracy, then I have every right to have a party that represents me. if we are in a professed democracy, why am I being forced in practically to vote for people who we all know don't represent me and have no intention of representing me and the vast majority of the British public, which, as I'm sure you understand, 67%, I believe.
66%
support an immediate ceasefire. And yet, like you were saying, there's a complete, you know, undemocratic and extremist attitude towards this mm-hmm. that has justified, as we speak, the genocide of my people. And I'm not going to, you know, vote or put my support behind anyone that hasn't done everything in their power possible to stop that.
And the rise in the number of independent candidates and mm-hmm. minor parties is probably going to put an end to that political duopoly in Westminster.
Well, I hope so.
That is the hope. Rick, we've passed 150 days, as I mentioned earlier, of this relentless bombardment. What is your assessment of where things stand?
Well, in 1967, the U.S. launched a surprise attack on its Arab neighbors, and in 6 days, they were able to decimate the air forces of those neighbors and win that war. In contrast, we've got 150 days or 5 full months of Israeli slaughter, massacre, and killing, and they are nowhere near achieving their goals. The Palestinian resistance has withstood this onslaught, this slaughter, and I think the Israeli government is desperate because they can see that their goal of winning a quick victory is not being achieved. They can see that the world is increasingly turning against them, even the West, so that the U.S. is you know, almost alone. They're not entirely alone. Germany and the U.K. and France are still supporting them, but less and less so. So the pressure is building, and Netanyahu is desperate, and in a way the U.S. is desperate to see this come to an end.
He sure is desperate. There's, of course, divisions inside the Israeli so-called war cabinet. We'll talk about that in a little later in the program. But meantime, the U.S., Qatar, and Egypt have been attempting to hammer out a ceasefire agreement, at least on the look of it, for a number of weeks with seemingly little progress, despite early optimism. Earlier this week, the Egyptian foreign minister, Sameh Shoukry, met his Dutch counterpart for talks where the fate of the negotiations was outlined.
The negotiations are sensitive. I can't say there is optimism or pessimism, but we haven't reached yet a point at which we can achieve a ceasefire. But it is important that everyone understands the importance of achieving this and to take responsibility for the decisions to be taken in this regard. There must be a clear political will that goes along with this. And some countries have abilities, like the United States of America. And there is a development there in the remarks that were said by the American Vice President last night when she spoke about the importance of an immediate ceasefire.
Rick, let me come to you for this one as well. The Israelis have not bothered to send any negotiators to these talks going on in Cairo. Does this tell you just how little regard they have for the whole process?
Well, it's an indicator, and it's going to be interesting to see what they report back to the International Court of Justice, because they're coming up on the deadline where they have to report. Meanwhile, their overlords in Washington are in deep trouble. Just as in British politics, we're seeing upheavals with George Galloway winning a landslide victory. 7 days ago, we had a Democratic Party primary race in Michigan, which is a very key state in the United States election process, and over 100,000. Registered Democrats voted uncommitted. So this is a sign. Ideologically, Biden is a Zionist. He's dependent on Zionist funds, and yet most of the party is not feeling that way and is increasingly wondering what the heck is going on. So it's the same thing as your guest from Britain was saying, where this, you know, increasingly a contradiction between democracy and what we're seeing in reality.
Do those electoral developments in the States perhaps explain the Biden administration's eagerness to claim victory in some kind of a temporary truce?
I think they would be very happy to have that happen, but it's a bit of a smokescreen because they're talking about, just like you say, a temporary truce, and whereas other people are saying that we need to have a ceasefire that stops it once and for all.
Correct. And Tariq, Egypt, one of the parties to these ongoing negotiations, could they do more, and could the Arab bloc overall do more to bring an end to this?
I think there's a lot they can do to alleviate the suffering that Gazans are going through at the moment. The borders are still not as open as they should be. There's still not enough aid getting through. And I don't want to say that's the fault of Egypt in so much as it's the fault of the Egyptian leadership, which is an important distinction to make. Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree that Egyptian leadership, just as much of the Arab leadership, is not at all representative of the population and the people in these countries. What we are definitely seeing is a very lackluster response. I think all of us Arab Palestinians are utterly disappointed in what has been, you know, little more than words and messages, and a couple nothing more than sort of virtual signalling, sort of technical achievements of dropping some limited amounts of aid.
Yeah.
When we're talking about the mass starvation of 2 million people right at their border. So of course there's more they can do. So more they could have done over the past, not just since 7th of October, but for the past 50 years or so, that they've sat idly, maybe not completely idly,
yeah,
but for the current regime has sat idly by as they've seen their brothers across the border under siege for decades now. And I can't say I'm surprised, but I'm definitely disappointed.
And yet some of them normalized ties
apartheid. Yeah.
Israel too, didn't they?
Jordan. I've normalized ties with Israel.
UAE, yeah.
Yeah, and they've used that, of course, as an excuse.
All right, let me cross over to California again. Rick, we'll highlight in a little more detail the position of Washington in these talks later in the program once again, but highlight for me the impact that is having on the presidential race again, especially for Joe Biden's campaign and the likelihood, so it seems, of Donald Trump going head-to-head with Joe Biden and what that would mean for the Palestinians.
Well, unfortunately, the Palestinians are between a rock and a hard place there, because Donald Trump, while he's very different than Joe Biden on Ukraine and Russia, he, of course, is horrible on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and he's as beholden as Biden is to Zionist pro-Israel forces in the United States. So we're looking at a pretty grim picture there. Really the hope has to be in the United States that we can see third parties and alternative parties, such as George Galloway's tremendous victory the other day, appearing and offering an alternative, because right now, for many, many decades in the United States, there's been no difference in foreign policy between the Republicans and the Democrats. Yeah. They may differ and be at odds and at war on domestic issues, but when it comes to foreign policy, it's one foreign policy, and one of that's not pretty, and that's a domination and supporting in the Middle East, supporting Israel. And so that's our reality. Things are, and, I think,
yeah,
yeah, it's,
go
a,
ahead.
It's approaching a breakup point, though.
Yeah, and that's what they say about the mainstream political parties here, too, the conservatives and labor, that they are not different in terms of their approach to the Middle East and to the Israel-Palestine issue. But let me take a moment to let our viewers know, if they have just joined us, that this is Gaza Under Attack, a deep dive into the news surrounding the ongoing U.S.-led Israeli genocidal war on Gaza, the blockaded coastal enclave. You mentioned George Galloway, Rick, the pro-Palestinian politician. George Galloway has caused a panic in British politics with his landslide win in the by-elections held in Rochdale, Greater Manchester, which accorded him a mandate to speak about Gaza in the House of Commons of the British Parliament. Galloway told us it's time small parties challenged big ones.
A genocide is not a small thing, and the International Court of Justice has already sent Israel for trial, having concluded that there was a plausible case for genocide being committed in the Gaza Strip. That's not a small thing. That doesn't happen every day. But the local politicians here in the council and the national politicians across the consensus of the front benches want to pretend that it isn't happening, want to disguise that they are deeply involved in it. They're giving cover to it and even given military collaboration with it. So, you know, I always put it to the journalists who implicitly criticize me for raising this genocide. If this by-election was taking place in 1940, when Hitler was building death camps for the Jews, would anyone have criticized me for highlighting it in a by-election campaign? Of course, the truthful answer is many of them still would have, because much of the British media was highly supportive of the rise of Hitler and Mussolini. It must spark a rethink, even if not publicly acknowledged, that the people are not with the government. They're not with the opposition. So what does that mean? It means we need a new opposition. It means we need a new government. And that's where we come in. We are offering a program, and the independents that we will ally with are offering a different approach. And suddenly it will become possible for real, meaningful political change. You know, big parties can become small. Look at PASOK in Greece, for example, or the so-called French Socialist Party of Mitterrand and Hollande. They are minuscule now. Big parties can become small, and small parties can become big.
The United States are the chief architect of the bombardment of Gaza, yet have a pivotal role in the negotiations. Here are some words of the U.S. State Department spokesperson on the Biden administration's approach to the talks and why Washington remains optimistic. A deal can still be done.
Israel has to be careful that in achieving a tactical victory, it doesn't endure a strategic defeat. And it remains our advice to them not to do that. In our view, the obstacles are not surmountable. Are not insurmountable. In our view, should be possible to reach an agreement. We think the proposal that Israel put on the table in consultation with the United States and with Qatar and Egypt is one that Hamas should agree to. And it's one that would alleviate the suffering of the Palestinian people and bring about an immediate ceasefire for 6 weeks. And so we think that agreement can be reached.
We have a few more minutes to go. Let's continue the conversation with Tariq Othman and Rick Sterling. And Tariq, let's take each of those sound bites one at a time. George Galloway winning the by-election in Rochdale. You alluded to it earlier on, but could this be a message nationally to a bigger audience out there, bigger number of voters out there, comes the general election, this win, stumping victory by George Galloway?
Definitely. And the message is very clear. The message is very clear for everyone to see that the traditional parties no longer represent us as British people. Not just, by the way, on the issue of Gaza, but we've seen the complete, you know, indifference of both parties to all sorts of issues of poverty and economy here in the UK. And we've seen that the people in this country are simply fed up. And part of that, of course, is we're seeing George Galloway win. But what's also very crucial is that second place was neither Labour nor Conservatives. I believe it was David Tully, an independent candidate. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing is a complete, you know, the demise of the traditional party structure here in the UK, specifically in Rochdale, but what it could be is a sort of bad omen for these politicians and the leaders of these parties if they don't change tact.
Speaking of changing tack, Benny Gantz, a member of the Israeli war cabinet, is here to meet David Cameron, probably the prime minister. And all we've heard from David Cameron saying that Israel is an occupying power, that it has a duty under international law to provide aid, that the situation is dreadful, meaning in the Gaza Strip, and people were starving to death. That's all we're getting from the Foreign Secretary of the UK. No canceling of arms license or anything like that to the Israeli regime. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's very representative of what the British government, what their policy has been so far. I think it's very reminiscent of a, you know, tactic in US and Israeli media of shoot and cry, or that's how the saying goes, of you participate and actively encourage the death of people, you know, and simultaneously shed tears for those that you've murdered. Israelis will do it when they pretend like the thousands of dead children are simply, you know, that they when they pretend that they mourn for those children when they clearly don't.
And just we saw the Americans airdrop aid into the Gaza Strip.
And we have, you know, Americans and British politicians time and time again saying that enough, you know, too many people have died, but will simultaneously provide weapons to encourage the killing of more people.
Absolutely. Let me put one final question to Rick. And Rick, the Biden administration, it is argued, is bargaining above anything else for a grand bargain, rather, that would include Palestinian statehood, security guarantees, and recognition of Israel by Saudi Arabia. As Palestinian statehood, of course, firmly opposed by the current Prime Minister Netanyahu. Is any of that achievable?
Well, we can just look at history, because they've been, you know, talking about one version or another of the two-state solution for, you know, for 50 years. And where are we? You know, beyond the need for a ceasefire, which, you know, is, of course, the first priority, we've got apartheid in Israel, and we've got the occupation. And, you know, there has to be some... the issue has to be dealt with sooner than later, because it's gone on, it's festered for all these years, and it's come to this. The United States, you know, has really shown itself. It's not an honest broker, there's some other international forces need to play the leading role here.
All right. Thank you for that. That is all the time we have. My thanks to our guest, Tara Rothman, here in the studio with me, and Rick Sterling. Until next time, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts. Goodbye.
The Limelight.
Jordanians have rallied for Gaza from Amman to the occupied Palestine border, calling an end to the occupation and their government's normalization with the Zionist entity. Furthermore, they are protesting their government's trade routes with the occupying entity, even forming human chains to block the land corridor created to sustain Israel. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, throughout the week, Jordan's Air Force, with the approval of the Zionist regime, delivered aid via airdrop to people in the besieged Gaza Strip. The move was widely hailed as heroic. Overseen by Jordan's King Abdullah II, the aid was dropped in large pallets of items, which included goods like ready-to-eat meals, medical supplies, and other items. These pallets were delivered through several airplane drops, causing a rush of Palestinians to flee throughout the Gaza Strip to gain access to the boxes. The airdrop itself was also used as a media opportunity for the king, who was filmed dropping parcels while awkwardly posing for cameras. Though some aid was received by hungry and desperate Gazans, many parcels simply went missing, particularly in North Gaza, where acute food shortages have caused death by starvation. Parcels, despite being waterproof, were purportedly dropped into the Mediterranean Sea far beyond reach, or even fell into the Gaza envelope, which can effectively only be accessed by Zionist settlers and military. For the parcels dropping into the sea within reach, rowboats had to be deployed to gather the precious aid. If Gazans go beyond a specific point in the sea, they are targeted by Zionist naval forces, which have been given shoot-to-kill orders. Unfortunately, some of these parcels will never be received by any needy Palestinian. Other pallets landed in locations where the Zionist regime is enacting a full entry block for Palestinians. Even if the airdrop landed in an accessible street or rooftop, the occupation army would murder anyone who went to it, as they have demonstrated with what is now known as the Flower Massacre. The massacre occurred when Zionist